Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Vedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am the tech editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting next to me, as he always does, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Aw, I spilled my midichlorians.
Oh, you know, I'm going to have to get them up.
So, we're going to start off this podcast with a little listener tweet. This listener tweet comes from Jacqueline Hyde, who says, "Got a listener request for you. How lightsabers work." The force is strong with this one. So we are going to talk about lightsabers. This is kind of an interesting subject in the sense that really it belongs in stuff you missed in history class because it did happen a long time ago.
In a galaxy far, far away?
Yeah. Or technically it could be fan stuff, but they don't have a podcast. So yet, we're going to tackle it before anyone can grab it from our cold, dead Padawan hands.
As the Jedi would say, neener, neener.
Yes, the Jedi would say that. So, of course, we're talking about the civilized weapon from a or the elegant weapon from a more civilized age.
Yes.
The lightsaber, as introduced to us through George Lucas's brilliant work, Star Wars, A New Hope. Or just Star Wars when it first came out in 1977.
It was not American Graffiti, as many people think.
No, no. There was no cameo of the lightsaber in American Graffiti. Although that would have made that movie that much more awesome.
Yeah.
So, lightsabers. Of course, this is the weapon the Jedi use, the magic sword of the Star Wars series. And in fact, when most of the interviews I've seen with Lucas, he just refers to it as a magic sword.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just it's that's what the purpose of it is. It's just it happens to be called a lightsaber, but it's a magic sword. So the problem with magic is that there's not a whole lot to how it works other than magic.
You know, you're just totally getting into that early. I thought we were going to go ahead and talk about how it works.
All right. Well, this has not stopped people from telling us how it works, despite the fact that it's magic. So let's talk about.
There are people who will argue exactly how this works.
Yeah, it's not
canon. As a matter of fact, we have an article on how it works.
It's not canon. and canon is important to me.
Okay, all right.
But then again, you know what is canon?
What's that?
Jar Jar Binks. So let's just move on into how lightsabers work. So a lightsaber is made up of several different parts. You've got the handle, which is pretty much where everything is, right?
Yeah.
So the handle has at the base of the handle, you've got the power cell.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a, was it diatium?
Yes, a diatium crystal.
All right. So you've got the diatium power cell that's in the
Somebody's
base.
Somebody's going to correct us, you know.
That's fine. You know what? If they correct us, if they take that time, more power to them.
Speaking of diatium
power cell is in the middle of a power vortex ring mm-hmm. and a power field conductor. Now, where does all this power go? That's essentially like the battery of the lightsaber. That's the very base. So,
and it's got a lot of energy stored in it, too.
Yes, lots and lots of energy. Now, where does this energy go once it starts to emit from the power cell?
It goes into the crystal energy chamber.
Right, where you have your primary crystal. Mm-hmm. Now, depending on whom you ask,
yes,
this crystal may or may not determine the color of the lightsaber's blade.
Yes.
Now, some would argue that the real determiner for the lightsaber color lies with the Jedi, him or herself, and the force that Jedi imbues the crystal.
Right.
So in that case, you could have any crystal and essentially have a lightsaber of any color. It would all be up to the individual Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
Others would argue, nay, 'tis not so. The lightsaber color is dependent entirely upon the color of the crystal you select to focus this power.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with that one.
Okay.
So, you know, of course, we also need to talk about how Jedi lightsabers are different from Sith lightsabers, because they are.
Yes, they are.
So the crystals that Jedi use mm-hmm. tend to be natural crystals.
Right.
They're crystals found in caves throughout the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And so these crystals are they can take the power and create the force of the I guess the actual lightsaber blade mm-hmm. is the best way of putting it. And the Sith, what they do is they'll make their own crystals. They'll create a forge and they'll build a synthetic crystal. And theirs tend to be red.
Yes.
Which is why you see Sith like Darth Maul or Darth Vader or Darth Tyrannus walking around with a big old red lightsaber.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Jedi, they tend to stick with blue and green, although other colors are also available.
Yes. So there are more than one crystal, though. The primary crystal is just one part of that. There are secondary and smaller crystals, and it sort of depends on the Jedi who builds the lightsaber, because creating a lightsaber is part of becoming a Jedi.
Yes, it's actually the final step of Jedi training, according to Darth Vader.
Yes. So but what the additional crystals do is they actually help focus the energy into a blade form.
Right, right. So the energy coming from the power cell, once it passes through the crystal, that's what gives it the destructive force that we see from lightsabers.
Mm-hmm.
The other crystals focus that into the blade. And depending also upon whom you ask, they may also give the lightsaber other certain powers.
Mm-hmm.
Like it may enhance certain aspects of the lightsaber. For example, we know that lightsabers can deflect blaster fire.
That's true.
Some of these crystals are apparently more effective at deflecting blaster fire than others.
Yes.
And others may be better at cutting through certain kinds of material. So now other scholars will argue
mm-hmm.
that's not the case. The it just focuses the blade, doesn't imbue it with any other powers. Personally, I haven't had my hands on a lightsaber in a really long time, so it's kind of hard for me to tell you exactly which ones are right. And also, I have only ever really used one. So with that small sample size, it's impossible to say.
Yes, and this is probably a good time to point out that if you do have the opportunity to use a lightsaber, remember, it's not the kind of thing that you just want to play around with, because it can be a very very dangerous weapon.
Yeah, it turns out
you can do some serious damage
with
it.
When you can cut through, you know, a foot of steel, that it's not the best thing to, you know, swat a fly with.
No.
After it goes through the focusing crystal, it passes through the blade energy channel, which again further refines the blade and directs it into a straight line that would emerge from the hilt. Mm-hmm. And then at the very top of your blade, you've got your cycling field energizers, your energy modulation circuits, and then you've got your controls. Your controls adjust the power of the blade, and it also adjusts the length of the blade. So even though we normally see lightsabers used at a pretty standard length, most people have it at a, you know, whenever they turn on their lightsaber, it's pretty much the same length each time.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, you can adjust that. So you can make it longer or shorter using the blade length adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a magnetic stabilizing ring and a blade shroud emitter at the very top, which help control the blade so it doesn't just zap out when you turn it on.
Mm-hmm.
That's your basic anatomy of your lightsaber hilt.
All right.
And then,
and of course, then there's the activation matrix,
yes,
which is the Star Wars term for
the on switch.
Yes. I love that part. They're, the handle is about 30 centimeters in length, so they're not ridiculously long.
Right.
Which is good to know.
It generates an arc wave energy field.
Oh, yes.
And this is why the blades actually have a stopping point.
Yes. And it has it produces sort of a gyroscopic effect, too, which is why you have to be very careful with it, because it has a pull to it, if you will.
Right, but that also makes it easier to use, because otherwise it would be like swinging a flashlight around.
Yeah,
there'd be no feedback from swinging the handle, and it would make it much more difficult to master a lightsaber if you didn't have that gyroscopic effect when you started swinging it around. So the blade arc tip, that's the very end of the lightsaber, and it's the arc emitter is what's keeping it from becoming like a blaster.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, lightsabers predate blasters.
Yeah.
Before
it was a more civilized age, after all.
Yes, it was, and you know, I guess civilized means that you lopped each other's limbs off, as opposed to shooting each other from very far away.
Never bring a lightsaber to a blaster fight. Oh, wait. No, you could do that.
No, yeah, you can do that because. All right. So let's talk about that's the basics of building your lightsaber. Now, each Jedi builds his or her own lightsaber as part of their training.
Yes.
And they're going to build it according to their own particular fighting style.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have you heard about the different Jedi fighting styles?
No, I haven't.
There are 7 major forms.
I hadn't realized
of
that.
Lightsaber styles. Yes.
Okay. Well, why don't you tell this?
All right. I'm going to go into a little detail, but I'm just going to do this as a pretty high level thing.
No, we don't need to get into depth.
No.
This isn't Jedi fighting style stuff.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's another podcast that we're starting next month.
Yeah. Start requesting now. Next month being April, I can't imagine when the first episode will come out. So the fighting styles, you can think of it kind of like martial arts styles.
Mm-hmm.
Not all martial arts styles are alike. Karate mm-hmm. is very different from jujitsu, which is very different from Aikido, which in turn is different from Hapkido.
Is there drunk Jedi style?
No, there's no drunken master Jedi style. Although I hear Yoda can get up to some wacky shenanigans on a Saturday night. The 7 forms of lightsaber combat are actually listed as, you know, form 1, form 2, form 3. They each have their own names, but I'm not even going to try and pronounce them because they're all alien and I don't have the capability. I don't actually know what the pronunciation is for most of them, but
if you hadn't spilled your midichlorians, you'd be fine.
I know. In general, form 1 is the foundation. It is the basic form of lightsaber combat. It's your basic strikes, your basic defenses. It teaches you how to view the body as a series of targets. Like you think of, you divide up the body, like the head is a certain certain target, the arms, the torso.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, attacks are very specific to each target, you know, different slashing techniques and hacking techniques.
Uh-huh.
So form 1 is kind of lightsaber combat 101. Everyone pretty much goes through that. Form 2 is dueling.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this lightsaber combat really concentrates on finesse, blade control, footwork. This is the kind of style that Count Dooku / Darth Tyrannus used.
Yes.
Now, that is why his lightsaber handle actually has a curve at the end of it. It's so that he can hold it kind of like a pistol grip. Gives him a lot of control over the tip of the blade. And that's just his style of dueling. Now, this was much more popular before blasters came out
mm-hmm.
because it was just really meant for lightsaber-to-lightsaber combat. Once blasters came out, Jedi began to realize that in order to deflect these blaster bolts, they would need to adapt their fighting style. This is not the best style to use if you're being shot at by stormtroopers, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that was Tyrannus's favorite form. Then there's form three, which is defensive, where you are trying to reveal the least amount of target space on your body.
Right.
So it's really good for defending against blasters, that kind of thing. Form four is an acrobatic style, lots of flips and spins. You're using the force to boost your physical abilities. So you're depending more on these acrobatics than on your blade at that point.
Yes.
So Yoda uses that a lot. If you've seen him fight Count Dooku, he's like a little Cuisinart. And then Form 5, that uses the deflective nature of the lightsaber to reflect blaster fire. You use strength in your attacks, so it's a more brute force kind of approach.
Mm-hmm.
This is the style favored by a certain Skywalker family.
Yeah.
Both Anakin and Luke used Form 5. Form 6 combines elements of Forms 1 through 5, but it also teaches that you should be detached from emotion. You should be using very calculating ways of moving. You shouldn't let your emotions dictate what you're doing. Form 7 is kind of the opposite. That's leveraging your emotion into power and using that to fight your opponents. This was what Darth Maul used, with some reliance on form 4 as well, the acrobatic style.
Now, of course, he had a double-bladed lightsaber.
Yes.
And those don't work all that differently than a regular lightsaber. They're just basically two lightsabers attached together at the hilt.
Right. So there's four crystals instead of two.
Right.
Or a minimum of four, because you have to have four, two of the generator type and two of the focusing type at minimum. Yes. In order to create the two blades.
By the way, those focusing crystals are usually Adegan crystals.
Usually. But you can also find them on Dantooine, mm-hmm. as well as many, many other planets within the Star Wars galaxy.
Yes, until Sinistar comes after you and, calls you a coward.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry. I switched genres there.
Okay. You lost me.
Seriously, you never played Sinistar?
I rarely played Sinistar.
Okay. Anyway.
Also, so, depending way, 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 way back in the past, back when the Jedi were much more numerous,
mm-hmm.
the color of your blade also would indicate what kind of Jedi you were.
Really?
For example, if you had a blue blade, that signified that you were a Jedi Guardian. And so you're much more, kind of a physical – you would get into the fights. You would, defend people with your prowess. Green would suggest that you were a Jedi Consular. And this would be someone who was much more thoughtful and kind of contemplative.
Mm-hmm.
And then yellow would indicate that you're a Jedi Sentinel, and that's someone who kind of was in between the other two. So not as physical as the Guardians, but not as brainy as the others either. So
yellow and blue do make green.
This is true.
I learned that somewhere. So should we go into the other aspect of lightsabers?
So you mean we're actually going to step outside of the realm of Star Wars?
No, I was just looking at the time and thinking
that maybe we should do that. That's probably a good idea. All right. So that's within the Star Wars universe, of course. That's how they supposedly work. And I should also add, none of that is canon. And when I say canon, I'm talking about the stuff that Lucas himself has signed off on as saying, yes, this is officially part of the Star Wars history.
Yeah.
Most of that is just the movies. To some extent, you could argue the books as well. Some of those Lucas has more or less said, even though that didn't appear in the movie, that is canon as well.
Mm-hmm.
But he never goes into explaining the blades in the movies. And so this is really other people trying to retcon, really, to explain why this stuff works.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, and if you're unfamiliar with the term, a canon is basically the written instructions for how a magical or fantasy or science fiction universe operates. And it kind of helps you write the stories, and the Star Wars canon sort of came about after some of the stories had already been in practice. So it's a little looser than some of the other universes.
Right. So if you were to read some of the comic books or some of the other books that have been written in the Star Wars universe, you might notice that they sometimes contradict what happened in later movies. Mm-hmm. And that's because they're not canon.
Yep.
All right. So moving on to how they actually created this effect.
Which is really fascinating too, I think.
Right. Now, first of all, in A New Hope, the first film, mm-hmm. They hadn't originally considered animating or adding any light to these at all. The original idea was that the lightsabers were going to have, there were these I think it was three-sided pole that came out. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a triangular pole, and each side was coated with a very reflective material. And they used a lamp that was on the same side as the camera and focused the light so that it would reflect off of it, be really shiny. And there was a motor inside the handle that would direct the side to be aligned properly for the camera.
Mm-hmm.
But the effect was not as zippy as Lucas wanted.
Yeah.
So they started to cast about and see if they could find some other way of making this magic sword seem really magical.
Mm-hmm.
And they contacted an animator by the name of Nelson Shin. Nelson Shin took a week and looked at this footage that had been shot and used an effect called rotoscoping.
Oh, yes. The technique, an animation technique. It's actually a very old technique. A lot of people, and myself included, associated with Aha's Take on Me video.
I associate it with Ralph Bakshi's Lord of the Rings movie.
Oh, yeah.
Also, Wizards was another movie he used it in.
Wow.
But it's where you take live-action footage and then you overlay animation on top of it, sometimes replacing the live-action footage entirely, sometimes enhancing it. And in this case, it was enhancing it.
Yes.
So what he did was he used animation cells to create this glowing blade effect on top of the actual physical rods that were in the shots, and then synchronizing the cells that he had created with the actual film, overlaying the animated effect on it, creating a new print that combined these two individual prints, and that's how he sent that back to Lucas and said, well, here, you can try this and see if this works. Lucas liked it. They decided to go with that approach. They refined it a little bit. They added some color, so you had different color blades, because originally they were both white.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the beginning of the lightsaber effect. Now, in the first three films, which oddly enough are episodes 4, 5, and 6, they used the rotoscoping technique where they would essentially hand draw these things on cells.
Yeah. Basically, what they do is they put that cell over the original film and color it in.
Yeah.
And then, but that's not all of it, because that does add some color to it. But from there, they have to shoot more film with the cell and the original. And when they do that, they shoot it over a black background and use a light diffuser over the lens.
Yes.
They double expose the shots.
Yes.
And that makes them really pop. That makes them look sort of, you know, gives them that sort of otherworldly effect, how bright they are in the shots. So,
right.
It's kind of sophisticated when you think about it, but very, very time consuming.
Right. Yes. It took a really long time. It took slightly less time by the time they got around to the prequels, episodes 1, 2, and 3, because they could do it all digitally.
But somebody still has to go into the computer. And
right, you're doing it all in computer as opposed to doing it on handmade cells. So I mean, it still takes time. It's just not quite as time consuming, except for the fact that Lucas decided to throw in about, I don't know, 10 times as many lightsaber battles in those first three movies as the original trilogy combined.
Yeah.
The actual hilts of the lightsabers were made up of old camera flash battery packs, mm-hmm. and other odds and ends, like stuff from hardware stores, like plumbing gaskets and things like that.
Yeah.
Now, they shot these movies in England, so they were raiding various British hardware shops. So a lot of the materials that they used to build the lightsaber handles are very hard to find, or sometimes impossible to find, in the United States, which is why it's kind of challenging to create a model of those first. Again, this is for the first trilogy, mm-hmm. 4, 5, and 6. It's hard to make those faithfully, just because it's hard to get those parts in the United States. Now, for episodes 1, 2, and 3, those were all machined. Mm-hmm. So there's all like routed. They designed them in a computer and then used a router to cut custom parts and then assembled them. So it wasn't like they were just grabbing whatever they could find and sticking it together. They came up with the concept. An artist came up with the concept and then they built it from scratch.
That was actually one of my questions. Like, where are the Jedi going to machine these parts? And, you know, is electrical engineering part of their training?
It's Routandria.
Routandria,
yeah. You go to Routandria. Then. It's in the CAD system.
Oh, the CAD system. And, nice.
Yeah.
Very, very nice.
A lot of rascals in the CAD system, as it turns out. I think Han Solo actually spent a lot of time in the CAD system.
very nice. No, it's funny because when I started doing the two pieces of this, the fantasy part and the, you know, special effects, how do they make it happen? I started thinking about that and went, so who's actually making these, you know, because each one is different. Well, that's one of the things too that, that I think is at least somewhat canon is that it's all sort of individualized, mm-hmm. you know, to the Jedi. So I'm wondering if, you know, they have to go down to the shop, you know, on the 34th floor and go, yeah, I need, can you make, the arc tip sort of in this shape? No, not exactly like that. Yeah.
It's kind of sad because when I look at the props from the first trilogy, mm-hmm. those look like things that have really lived in that universe for a really long time. I mean, the ships are all beat up and even the Jedi.
The Jedi are beat up.
Yeah, the Jedi are beat up pretty bad. But no, even the lightsabers look like they've been well used.
Yeah.
Whereas if you look at the prequels, everything looks like brand new and sparkly and it's just a little, it almost feels like it's two different universes.
And, well, you know, they are, 30 years apart?
And 30 years? Come on. Do you really want to go down this road? Because, look, we've been recording for like 24 minutes. I'm not going to go for another 50.
Yeah. 50 is probably conservative in your
case. Would be only because I'd have to stop and get a break to drink something. So we talked about the fact that, you know, rotoscoping either digitally or by hand, that replacing frame by frame,
yeah. mm-hmm.
these rods, the physical things that were in the shot. And you needed the physical rods because you needed to be able to make contact when you're doing lightsaber battles, right?
No, that's a good point. The handles that they use in the movies right now are, you know, plastic handles with aluminum rods and they're basically cylindrical and colored red, blue, or green.
They actually had to wrap the aluminum rods in construction paper because they were giving off too much dust when they were colliding during the lightsaber battles.
Yes.
The original trilogy used, I think, wooden dowels. Mm-hmm. I don't think they used aluminum, at least not in the first film.
Yeah. I would imagine that would be a little hard on your wrists too, because they're actually, you know, having a sword fight with aluminum rods. And
yeah. Now the rods are thinner than what you see on the screen.
Yeah.
They're not as thick as the lightsaber blade appears to be. But yeah, they need that so that they can do these moves and make it look convincing. Otherwise you would have lightsabers passing through one another and that would just not look right.
Yeah.
So there is a physical object there that you are concealing with the overlay. And before we get into how you can do this yourself, I wanted to talk a little bit about the sound effects.
Oh, okay, sure.
They were designed by Ben Burtt, he's a brilliant sound designer.
Absolutely.
Sound designers are, I think of them kind of like a very specific type of engineer. Sound designers are the kind of people who can walk into a room and just take a second and think of a billion different ways to use the sounds that are naturally occurring in that room.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us, we walk into a room, we'll hear a noise, and then within a second, we are already ignoring it. It's just been incorporated into what we think of as the background. But if you ever take a moment and really listen to your environment, you start to pick things out as they happen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's one of those guys who can hear a noise and immediately say, hey, this would be great for blah, blah, blah. And when he was tasked with finding a noise for the lightsaber, he actually says this was the first sound he designed for Star Wars, was the noise of the lightsaber. And mm-hmm. he did it with a combination of two noises.
Yeah.
One was from an old projector. There was an old projector that would made this humming noise as it ran. And if you ran two of those projectors, you got a good little harmonizing effect
mm-hmm.
with the hum. And that's – so that formed the basis of the wow when you fire up your lightsaber.
Yeah.
The second was noise that you would get if you ran a microphone near a television. It would be this buzzing noise.
Oh, yeah, sort of a feedback.
Yeah, so that gives it the kind of little crackle sound that you also hear that's mm-hmm. just sort of kind of a light sound underneath the thrum. Mm-hmm. And then whenever someone would wave a lightsaber, well, you have to create the wow noise. The way he did that was he would move a microphone past a speaker that was playing that the humming noise.
Right.
And the Doppler effect would take care of the rest. So you're just moving a microphone around a speaker, and then it translates into the whoom, whoom, whoom when you're waving your lightsaber around. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely brilliant. One of the, there was no going into a synthesizer or going into a studio and trying to create this sound from scratch. He just found a practical way of creating it. And it's one of those things that is forever married with the Star Wars universe.
Yes.
You hear that sound, you know immediately what you're listening to.
Exactly.
Now, let's say you want to do this yourself. It's quite possible.
Well, you have to spend all that fuel getting to the other star systems.
No, I don't mean building a real one. I mean creating the effect in a video.
Oh, okay.
So you can do this yourself with the right kind of software. And there are a lot of different video editing suites out there that have the effects that you would need in order to create a lightsaber effect. Most of them are like things like Adobe has several. There's even a tool that's called LS Maker, which allows you to create a lightsaber effect pretty easily. In fact, all you have to do is do two clicks and you create the basis of a lightsaber effect for a single frame of video. And then you can go in and tweak the effect so that it looks exactly the way you want it to. But again, you have to do this frame by frame. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you do two clicks and it magically turns something into a lightsaber. You actually have to go through each frame and replace the physical object with the lightsaber representation in order for it to work properly.
Yes, but YouTube is filled with people who have done this successfully.
Yes, yes. And some not so successfully. Some of them are pretty awful. But the same effect, you can use the same sort of technology to create other effects besides the lightsaber effect. Mm-hmm. It's just that's one of those that is pretty easy to apply because really you're talking about a straight line.
Yeah.
It's not that complicated. It is time consuming though. It can take hours and hours and hours to render a video that would only last maybe 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. Especially if you have multiple blades on there because each blade is going to require a different layer in your video.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're going to, if you have like six Jedi out there and they all have lightsabers, that's six layers of video right there in order for you to have all the effects come together properly.
Yep. And then if, you know, they clash and you have to add the sparks and all
right.
the other
doodads. Right. And you have to, and it can be challenging. I mean, it's not something that you're going to be able to whip out in an hour. It's going to take a while, but it's doable.
All right.
And most of the software is, you know, like I said, there's some software out there that's free that you can use to create this effect if you have the time and patience and a little bit of artistic ability.
Yep.
So
and I have none of those three.
I think, the Force is weak with Paulette.
Yes, it is.
But
I'll admit to that.
I guess we can wrap this up and we'll finish with a little more listener mail. This listener mail comes from Matt, and Matt says, "Hey, Chris and Jonathan, thanks for taking my request about the dangers of Wikipedia. You guys are awesome, and I am totally having a starstruck moment right now. OMG, the Tech Stuff guys are talking about me. You two are great. P.S. If either of you are Trekkies, I can't remember if you have mentioned it before, I just got done watching one of my favorite episodes called The Offspring from The Next Generation, where Data becomes a dad. Data, I guess. I'm sorry, he hates it when you call him Data. I remember that episode. Great episode. Check it out. So I figured we'd talk about Star Trek for a second, since we talked about Star Wars for 30 minutes.
Yes. So, Star Trek has a serious canon.
Live long and prosper. Thanks, Matt. And it was our pleasure to talk about Wikipedia. We haven't received any hate mail on that yet. Time will tell if that'll change. If you would like to send us a message, please no hate mail. Just tell us how much you love Star Wars and that you want to build your own lightsaber now. You can write us techstuff@howstuffworks.com and check out the website, howstuffworks.com. We do have How Lightsabers Work right there on the site.
Yes, and if you do decide to build a lightsaber, don't hit anybody with it or yourself.
And may the Force be with you always.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the new Tech Stuff blog, now on the How Stuff Works homepage.
brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.